step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to the Real Estate Strategies Podcast, where we host in-depth conversations on everything real estate with the industry's biggest movers and shakers. I'm your host, Ken McElroy, joined by my co-host, Daniil. Let's get right into this episode.
Hello and welcome to the Ken McElroy Show. I'm your host here with Ken.
What's up? How are you guys doing?
Well, today we're going to be chatting about the housing market. The job market and the housing market have both recently made a massive 180, which we figured was going to happen.
Yep.
But there's a lot of people out there right now that they can't sell their house and they're losing equity. So yep. We wanted to address that today for people that are in that position, because for some people, it can be a very desperate situation. And we wanted to give them some options and some advice.
What do you want to start with?
Well, I guess let's just start by talking about the market in general, right? Like, I'm looking at a house in Scottsdale, and I told our realtor, it was $699. It got listed 6 weeks ago. And I told her I'm not even really interested until it's like $550, right?
But what was interesting is that, you know, so we have a parameter of what we're looking for, you know, and in our little market, Scottsdale, things are not very affordable, you know. So when you had that 699 property in a non-HOA area, a big lot, you know, older property, you put it on your, I think this is important, you put it on your watch list.
Yeah, I flagged it on Zillow so that I get the updates, right? Like yeah, the price yeah. updates.
And it's dropped twice, 50,000 each, 100,000 total.
Yeah, so basically, you know, I told the realtor I might be interested at 550 6 weeks ago when it was 699. In 6 weeks, it's now $599. And I'm thinking that was going to be in like 6 months, maybe a year if it was still available. And so she goes, hey, Daniil, you know, it's about like, I think if we offered your $550 at this point, there'd be a shot. And I said, Elisa, I'm not even interested at $550 now. Like, it just dropped $100,000.
Well, she took you at your word.
No, I know. But it dropped $100,000 in six
this
weeks.
Is my point.
So, you know, things are really dropping. And it's awesome if you're a buyer. It's sucks if you're a seller.
So let's first talk about why people are dropping their pricing.
Yeah.
Because I think that is probably the biggest issue.
Right.
You know, and then how far is it going to go?
So So what you're seeing is people that are dropping their pricing a lot, like these people are, right? Like 50 grand, 100 grand in 6 weeks, right? On a $700,000 yeah. house. So it's basically because they're in a pinch, right? Like they either have to move for their job, they're already built another home. You know, the sellers that are dropping like this, they're not sellers that eventually want to, you know, get something nicer or get something smaller. You know, these are people that are already financed on something else, or they have to sell their house, their divorce, you know, moving, whatever.
There's a reason. So in this particular case, they bought another home.
Yes.
So they have two mortgages. So that's the issue, right? So, or there could be another one where you're building a home, you're doing a spec, or it could be another one where you're trying to do a flip.
Right.
You know, so those are all scenarios. Maybe you've had a job relocation. It could be all kinds of things, right? And the home is vacant. So, you know, those scenarios, if you're in that scenario right now, there's unfortunately a bit of pressure on you because you know, what's happening is that there's personal savings rates have dried up. Mm-hmm. People are starting to get laid off. Mm-hmm. Not everywhere, of course, but, you know, it is trickling in. And interest rates are significantly higher.
Absolutely.
So the real issue is on that 699 house, you know, 4 or 5 months ago, the mortgage payment was significantly less than it is today.
Right.
The exact same house.
And most people solve to their monthly payment.
That's what I wanted to get to. Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't know what, you know, 3.5% or 4% is on, let's say, 699, but it's a lot less than 6% on 699. So, you know, it's easily what, you know, $500 to $1,000 more a month, probably.
Right.
Maybe not quite. I don't know. You guys will do the math and then correct me, which is fine. But the point is the monthly is a lot more. And so what happens is the buyer, you know, now they're trying to solve, of course, you know, to their, and so they're monthly. And so there's just less traffic and less people willing to make that stretch. And so the way that this is all going to equalize is that the seller is going to have to lower their price to now meet what the buyer can afford.
Right. So if they're going to do a general, right. If they're going to do a general sale, right. And what we're going to go over today is great for buyers too, because there's a lot of opportunity for the buyer with what the seller can do, right? And a lot of you buyers can use some of these strategies for homes that have been sitting on the market that aren't moving, which are a lot of them. And don't go by what your realtor says. You know, like, realtors are still saying things are flying off the shelves, even though they know that they're not, because they want the sale and they want to close the deal. So,
well, let me ask you a question. If you have 100% of realtors, how many do you believe, what percent are really, really going to be realistic about what 2023 is going to be? They're all going to be optimistic. They're all going to be positive, and they're all going to say, you know, things are going to be fine, although they can't back it up really with facts. So what we have is a situation where nobody knows, of course, what the Fed was going to do.
Right.
You know, they raised rates 6 times.
Right.
But if you're really following this stuff, what they should have done was they should have said to their client, you're facing high inflation and you've got some serious interest rate hikes ahead of you. If I were you, I would price this to sell quickly. Now what's going to happen is what I call death of 1,000 cuts.
Well, before you go into that really quick, let's. The number one point, right? So number one, if you have to sell your house right now, you don't do any other option, you need, as Ken is now going into, price it to sell now and then go ahead.
Yeah. So I just, guys, like, you know, when we were at 9.1 inflation in June, we're at 7.1 in December. So call that 6 months. It's gone down 2% and they've had 6 rate increases. Now, there is lag, and I'm doing a video on lag this week. But the point is, they're not done. You know, they're still at 7.1. That's way too high. The normal person can't afford this inflation, as we know, where people are getting crushed in all kinds of areas. So the Fed is going to continue to raise rates. So what you think is the rate today, just like it was a month ago or 2 months ago, it's not going to be the rate at the end of the first quarter. So that's the point. So this house could potentially go down into the fours.
Right, because, you know, they're slowly lowering the price. Now, 50 grand is actually pretty aggressive, right? But now they've done that twice. So, you know, you'd basically need to lower it to where you can move it. You can accept that offer. Because, you know, when the Fed raises rates again in January, which they very well could, it's going to be worth even less. So they're trying to now find a buyer around Christmas with the Fed raising rates. And realistically, you know, if they would have cut it 100 grand the first time, it might have just moved at the old interest rate. You know, they waited on this 50 grand until this next interest rate increase that just happened.
So the house is vacant, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and that, I think the listing agent somehow told you or somebody that they own another home. They already bought another home and they already moved. So,
but it's funny because I called the realtor's company because I was trying to kind of dig a little bit, you know, and they're like, oh, you know, and this is before they lowered it another 50 grand. And I said, you know, I was trying to get their situation and, you know, da, da, da. And the guy was like so arrogant, right? He's like, oh, well, they don't need, you know, they don't want to do any kind of special deal or da, 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 da. You know, this house is going to sell. It's a good house, you know. And then, look, another 50 grand down.
This
and,
is my point.
You know.
This is my point. This is who you've entrusted your big purchase or exit to, is an idiot like that. That's my point. Like, so, you know, you guys, obviously you can't predict the future, but I can tell you right now, we're going to see some rate increases through next year. So whatever the rates are today, if you're in a situation, you need to discount and sell.
It's not going to get better for you. And you don't know if you can wait a few years to sell your house, it could get better for you. Yeah. So I'm not saying, you know, but if you're in the position where you have to sell your house, you're paying on another mortgage or, you know, whatever, you're relocated, you need to price it to move now. Don't think that January or February or March is going to be better. It's probably going to be much worse. You're going to probably get a lot less for your house. So price it to move now.
And if you've owned it a couple of years, then you know what? Good on you. You've got a lot of equity in it because that's what the market did for you. Not because you're really, really smart. Because the market, it gave it to you and now it's just taking a little bit away. So, you know, you just need to be, you make the right decision. If you're in a financially bad situation, you know, just make the move, price it, sell it, move on, and take the equity that you have left and just, you know, because I think that prices are going to go down even more next year. I do. And, you know, it has to as interest rates go up. I just did a video Friday. I don't think that inflation is going to get down below 4% by the end of this year, end of next year, sorry, 2023. I just don't, you know, I was going to say 5, but I thought, well, it could be because the rents and home prices are part of inflation numbers and there is a lag effect. So 4%, which means that that's still well above the Federal Reserve's target number. So I think you're going to see a series of 0.5 and 0.25 rate increases through next year, and you know, which means that the interest rates could be quite a bit higher.
Absolutely. So the second point you wanted to make is, say that you want to be a little bit more creative, right? Like, you don't want to sell your house for less than you know think it's worth, right? And you want to try to ride out this storm. So one of the first things that you can do that we talk a lot about on this channel is to put a renter in it.
I love that idea.
You know, does it cash flow with a renter? Or even if it doesn't cash flow, are you only having to feed it maybe 100 or 200 bucks a month? It just about cash flows, where you could throw somebody in there and ride out this storm for the next, you know, 2, 3, 4 years.
There's a couple positives around that too. You know, don't forget, we were talking to Jeremy this week and, you know, they're looking at new houses and, you know, but he's got a, you know, call it a 30% capital gain on whatever equity he's made. So let's just say, as an example, you made $300,000 of equity. You know, that's a big number. That's almost $100,000 in tax. So you save the tax and you replace it with a renter. So don't forget to calculate that tax issue as part of your exit. So, you know, if in the scenario we were just talking about, you know, that 100 grand, you know, they would have lost that anyway on a capital gain. So
right, and people will tell you that you don't have capital gains on your house, but I think that you do if you make a certain amount of equity on it.
Yeah. I you know, the IRS wants their share of their fair share. Trust me. You know, if I hadn't heard that, are you saying that some people don't pay capital gains?
Well, we have a lot of people on here that say they don't pay capital gains on their actual property, and I've not ever sold a property, so I'm not sure about that, but that's what we
hear.
Is
that true, Jerry? I don't know. Yeah. You get a little bit of an exclusion, yeah.
Okay, so you might get some of kind of exclusion, right? But if it...
Yeah.
Yeah, but on your personal residence, yeah, it looks like you get some kind of exclusion.
You should turn to Eric.
But if you're over a certain amount, you're still paying the gates on it, which a lot of you are over that amount if you've had a significant growth in your property, especially in higher dollar amount areas.
Yeah, that's a good one to look into. But the renter, you know, that's a good one. Rents are going to go up, guys. You know, we're in a housing shortage, and you know, people are going to, the affordability is an issue because of the interest rates that's pushing people into rentals. So you just had this situation where Danielle lost a renter recently in the last 2 weeks that they moved into a house.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, they wanted a yard and something bigger. And,
yep. And they're renting the house. They're
yeah.
Renting a house. Yep.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. So
great couple, great tenants, you know, but you know, the place they moved into, you know, was for sale for a while. So.
And as apartment rents and condo rents go up, and they have gone up a lot, then people are now going to start to look at their options. And so I think that the single family rental market, it certainly is one of those options. I know I would, if I was paying north of $2,000-$3,000 a month in rent and, you know, 1,000 square foot, 1200 square foot place, I would probably turn to something with a yard and a garage and all of those things. Right.
Yep.
So, you know, so I think that, you know, that is a viable option for sure.
Yeah. And the third option, and this is good for buyers to know too, especially first time home buyers, is rent to own.
Yep.
So you know, as a seller, especially if you're sitting in these, you know, low interest rate loans, you could have somebody rent your house, but then it goes towards the payment to they eventually will be able to own it after X amount of years. Right. And, you know, do your due diligence. You'd have to get an attorney. But from what I understand, the risk is low because if they don't pay you or they decide to move out, you just keep the money and then you still have the house, right?
Yep. I have a buddy that just did this in Wisconsin, and he met with a guy, and the guy did a 5% deal with him.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, if you have a seller, by the way, now we're getting back into tax, but, you know, if a seller has a tax consequence, they can spread this out. You know, over a period of time by doing, I think it's called a contract sale.
Right. Yep.
And, you know, and in this particular case, my friend Travis, you know, he's doing a deal directly at 5%. The seller's going to carry 5%. So he's got a little bit of down, but he's got a 5% carry, which is better than he was going to get at a lender. So this is a real option, I think, especially now as these rates are jumping, that, and you might be in a situation where you could find these sellers open to this.
Well, that's what I was going to say, right? If you're a buyer and you're trying to, you know, get financing or whatever, look at some of these houses that have been sitting that are having these deep price cuts. And typically when you approach a seller for this, it's an education, right? Like most sellers, if you just call them and say, hey, will you do a rent to own with me? They're going to say, get out of here. No. But if you come prepared and you meet with them and you explain to them how it all works and tell them to contact an attorney and everything else, it may be something that they're interested in, and you maybe get a really good deal out of it at really good financing.
Yeah, you got to come with the whole package, though. If you're going to educate the seller, you have to have it all buttoned up.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. You can't. I wouldn't say you go contact an attorney. I would say, here's how it works. Show them a sheet.
Yeah.
Keep in mind that this, you know, what complicates it is the listing agent.
Right.
Yeah. So, but again, if you're helping the client, and you know, like in the situation we just talked about, they might do a rental.
Right. Exactly. And a couple of things here, Scott and TK were saying basically on your capital, because we have really smart people that watch,
yeah,
on your capital gains, you basically get $250,000 per person. So if you're married, it's $500, single, $250. Mary said, you know, don't buy now. The price is crazy expensive and interest rates are too high. That can be true. But on these rent-to-own deals, you could get very cheap financing depending on what the seller, you know, if they're sitting on a 3% loan, there's negotiation there for the, yeah, percentage of interest that you're going to be paying.
That's true. Don't forget, guys, in many cases, these sellers, that let's say you find a home where they've relocated. The sellers are sitting on these low interest rate loans. And so they're in a very good position. And that loan is an asset,
right,
to the seller. So, you know, so this is a good viable option.
Absolutely. And that kind of brings us to our next point. And, you know, those of you that are selling your home, do understand that your mortgage is your home really isn't the asset here. You could really leverage your mortgage and make that your asset. So our next thing is offer seller financing, right? So it's similar. That's similar to sub two deals, right?
Yep.
And so basically somebody's taking over your mortgage on the exchange of they pay it. And then when they're done paying it, they are able to obtain the home.
Yep.
And they're willing to do that for you because you're sitting on a 3% mortgage. And if they bought it, they'd have to walk into a 7% mortgage. So that is the key here, I think, for sellers to understand is your asset is that mortgage. If you refinance, that's your asset. Right. So you need to take full advantage of that asset when you're trying to sell your house and get creative here to get the price you want and move it off the market.
A lot of realtors they're not going to understand this. You know, they're going to try to look for that. You're just trying to get a deal, you know. The buyer is facing the debt is really now more of a liability.
Yeah.
Right, with the higher number. So if you've got a low cost loan, that's right now an asset.
Right.
You know, so that's really what's happening, and that's what's driving these prices down.
Absolutely. And it just you just have to be creative here. You know, if you just list your house, it's going to be a little bit rough for you right now. So just try to think outside the box.
And you have Airbnb on here, I see.
Well, that's next. Don't get there yet.
I won't.
So Galen says she does not agree with Mary. Right now is a good time to buy because sellers are desperate to sell. And I think that's a buyer. So sellers need to understand that their asset could be their loan. And buyers need to understand that sellers can be desperate to sell.
Yep.
You know, and that's why I had called on that house and the realtor was so arrogant. But if you can find a deal where maybe they only owe $450 on their mortgage. And if you can get them out of that mortgage, they'd be willing to sell even though it's listed at $550, you know? Like, you really need to call and just let people know that offer is sitting on the table. You know, our friend Taro was telling me, you know, when you call and you're not saying like, because they're probably not going to do it right now, but just let them know, hey, this offer's on the table. It's about $100,000 less than you want, but it's there.
Man, Jerry, you should pull that Yahoo article up if you can.
You guys
might have seen this. First of all, you both have good points. Mm-hmm. It just depends on your perspective.
Right.
So,
and what seller you're dealing with.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there was an article that came out last week in Yahoo that has already identified that 270,000 people were underwater already that bought in 2022. So in other words, their mortgages are more than the home is worth. So, you know, the question is that going to be, oh, it's on December 6th. Yeah. Last year, homeowners are underwater. There you go. Thanks, Carlos. So guys, take a look at that. Is this the beginning of it? You know, yesterday on our podcast with Jeremy, I told him, I said, I think we're in the second or the third inning in a 9-inning game. So, you know, we have the lag effect, which is going to continue to, this has all happened just in a few months. So, you know, it's just the beginning. And I think that the rates are going to continue to go up. And I do think we're going to start to see some unemployment in that first and second quarter. That's really going to show up.
But maybe explain to people why it's important to note that many people are already underwater. Like, what does that do?
So what that means is that whatever equity you had is gone.
Right.
That's the biggest thing to remember. So if you had a down payment, it's now gone.
Right. So where do you see that going though? So that's what's happening, but where can that potentially go?
Well, you know, you got your home price and your loan, and the difference between the two is the equity. And if now your loan is more than the home value, then you're sitting in a situation where you have to write a check.
If you sell,
right. And that's actually a scary moment. So especially if, let's say it's a flip, you know, I mean, imagine. So, you know, now you're facing, instead of getting equity, like you thought, potentially you thought the homes were going to go up again. You now are in a situation you have to actually write a physical check.
If you can.
If you can.
And that's kind of what we bring to, because Tammy said, would those then become foreclosure issues?
Potentially, yeah.
They can.
Yeah.
They can.
Yeah, in the car world, what they do is they just take that negative equity and roll it into the next car. So, you know, in the, like on a lease. But that's not the case here. So those people are trapped, but they can use some of the things that we just talked about. You can throw a renter in there and you can kind of wait and see if the equity comes back or the value goes up. But there's no refinance option. Clearly. And if you want to exit, then you are going to have to write a check.
Yeah. And Nemo says short sales if banks allow.
Yeah. There you go.
And he or she said that they haven't seen that since 2008-ish. And that is true. You know, we're going through another cycle. So you very well could start to see some of that, those things pop up.
Right. Yep. Yep.
So the last thing that you can do, and this is probably, I mean, you have to be in the perfect situation.
I can't believe you put Airbnb on here.
It's Airbnb, but you could do Airbnb.
We've been bashing Airbnb for like 2 weeks.
Well, our friends Lynn and Neil are, you know, doing that with their place in Phoenix. If you don't have an HOA, and especially if you're in like a highly trafficked vacation area, you may be able to Airbnb it. It probably would be my first choice, but if you are in a good location, it could be a choice that cash flows pretty good.
It is a whole separate business, and don't forget that there's upfront costs with furnishing it and, you know, getting it ready. It's basically running it like a hotel. And there are cities and counties and states passing, legislation and licensing and all this other things. So, you know, just know all of that. But you're right.
Yep. It can be a good option, you know, but I wouldn't start there. I'd start
I'm going to challenge you on this.
Oh no. Okay.
So here's why. Like if it's a really good Airbnb area, you're probably going to be able to sell it.
I don't know. The one I'm looking at's a good Airbnb area.
Well, it's just priced too high.
Well, I don't think it is.
I know they don't. That's true.
So it depends, but no, you're probably right. I mean, you know, but don't try to do an Airbnb if you're not in a good area to do it. Cause then you're just probably wasting your time.
You never know, but it is, what you're trying to do is cover the mortgage so that you don't have to deal with the negative equity or, you know, a low, the next buyer.
Exactly. All right. If you guys are watching, please make sure to like the video. We're at 43. Would love to get over 100. Really helps us out here. Secondly, is make sure you check out our happy hour tonight if you're an Inner Circle member. And if you're not an Inner Circle member, why aren't you an Inner Circle member? Go to kensinnercircle.com to sign up.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So our first Inner Circle question is from Caleb. And they're asking, what political party do you prefer for investing in multifamily?
Great question. So I'll tell you what. My experience, so I've been through Bush, been through Obama, been through Clinton, Trump, obviously, and now Biden. So here's the thing. Every single one brings a different focus. And so as an example, during the Bush time, they were pushing home ownership. Okay, home ownership actually hurts multifamily because they're, you know, who are the targeted buyers for homeowners? Renters. So, you know, so that was that. Obama kind of got blamed for the housing crash, but it actually started before him. And so then on the other side of that, some of these social programs that are being put out, those are good for landlords because they're basically taking care of renters socially. So like right now, what I would expect next is that you're going to have a situation where some of these renters are not going to be able to afford. And so I would expect that this administration is going to come out with some, you know, call it a rental assistance of some sort, right? So It just depends.
You know, Jeremy was surprised when you said that yesterday about rental assistance, but you really think that it's going to be.
I do. I do. And here's the other thing. You know, with Trump, you know, he rolled out the opportunity zones. So, you know, again, so what does that do? That spurs real estate development. So I don't really care, actually. I mean, I just kind of work within the within the rules of whatever is coming down the line. I did not agree with the Biden administration to put a moratorium on rent nationally, however.
You don't like rent caps.
I don't.
Like
So when the government gets involved in where they cap your income, and then they actually increase your things like utilities and property taxes, you know, then that's what I don't agree with, because then what will happen is money will flow to where it's treated best, and it'll go to, you know, whatever policies or administrations are in place at the time. But some of these cities are facing homelessness issues. They're, it's not going to get any better, in the foreseeable future. So that's going to erode values and all that kind of stuff. So we're just in a product of, we're in a time where, you know, people are starting to see the writing on the wall for some of the consequences and decisions that were made earlier. And by the way, that's red and blue, whatever. But I just don't really, it doesn't really matter. I obviously love progression. So if I'm going to err one way or another, I'd rather err toward red, because we need housing. And so, you know, typically, like, whether you agree with Donald Trump or not, the opportunity zone thing was a great idea, still is. And, you know, it's a great way to redevelop areas that need it and have money flow to those areas which would previously be blighted. So
going back to our conversation, John, who is a realtor, said he just bought a property listed for $800K for $650 by looking up the seller's mortgage as Ken suggested and offering that.
Nice.
It does happen. Don't let a realtor say they don't want to insult the seller. And I think that that's a big one, because I've tried to do that before. Like, oh, I want to offer that. Ooh, we don't want to insult the seller. You know, like, you get that, right? And the truth is, they take it or they don't take it. Who cares, right? A low offer is better than no offer in this kind of market.
Yeah, good job, John.
Yeah.
That's somebody who did their homework. You know, think of the mindset of the agent. So one, they told the, in that particular case, was it 650 and 800?
Yeah.
They told the imagine if that was us, you know, right, and we weren't that sophisticated in the real estate world, our realtor would have to come to, well, you know, they would actually have egg on their face.
Right.
Right. Hey, we think we should list it around 800. So that's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Two, they're thinking about their commission.
Mm-hmm.
3% of 800 is 24 grand. So, you know, so they're going to be resistant. By law, real estate agents have to submit offers.
Right.
So in other words, I don't think the real estate agent that's listing a property can not present an offer.
Exactly.
So that's the benefit that you have as a buyer, is that if you submit something, the real estate agent is going to have to show it to their client.
Exactly.
Yeah. So nice work.
So Casey has a good point here. And I think that he needs to watch out a little bit, he or she. So they were able to lock in a 4.5% rate construction loan for their next project of 28 units. It's already engineered and everything. I'm at the point where I need to sign the loan or push the pause button. I have 100% financing, but the loan is variable through construction and rolls into permanent financing when I finish the project in about 18 months. Would you start a new construction multifamily project right now, or pencils down, bro, and wait for a bit?
This is the million-dollar question. Well, I'd be interested. 4.5% is an interesting number, because I would be interested to see whether or not your construction lender is doing that to entice you to do the loan, you know, because I don't know that you can get 4.5% construction debt today. So maybe it's like a teaser number for 6 months or a year or something, but it sounds like it is a floater. I would check your, you know, the components of that loan to see and stress test it all the way out. And you know, how long is it going to take you to build these things? I'm going to guess a year and a half to two, based on the current conditions, the labor markets, and all that kind of stuff. So Ross and I have put our construction deals on hold just for a period of time. And don't forget, on the other side of that, were these townhouses?
Nope, I think they were just condos.
Okay, so they're for rent.
Yes.
So you have that. So you have that too. So whatever you decided that the condo is going to be worth today, you got to wrap your head around that it might not be worth that. And so what I think we have in that scenario is, you know, let's just for a moment say that you're going to price these at 350 and, you know, they're 1,000 square feet average. You know, is it going to be worth 350 and is your construction cost going to be, you know, 300, 250? And will the price be worth 350 in 2 years based on whatever interest rates are? So I think I'd be careful personally on this. And don't forget, you can tie up the land and hopefully you don't have any hard money up. You can kick this can down the road. You know, we just did that on our own personal house.
Yep. We're holding off on building because it's so expensive right now.
Yeah. So, you know, we've been working on, we assembled some land, we're designing the home and everything, and the contractor put all the numbers together. You know, and we just decided to push pause for the moment as Danielle and I, because the construction time frame went from 14 to 16 months to 28. And so it was out a year and it was significantly higher. So we just said, you know, let's just wait and see. So that's why I did that video. That's where my head is. I'm afraid of the exit for you. If it was a long-term hold and it works as a rental, I might do it, you know, depending on that, depending on what your all-in cost is.
But just know Ken and Ross are very experienced in construction. And even, you know, one of your projects did run over on construction costs.
Yeah, not so, one, but two.
Two. So, yeah, you have, I mean, it's you just make sure.
Yeah. Plus, we also own our construction company. So these are people that work for us.
So those are real
this
numbers.
This is not a third party as well. So, you know, if you're engaging a third party contractor, you're not going to get what's called a GMP or a gross maximum price on that property. Well, you might actually, the bank might have required it, but our experience is that, you know, as you know, if you just look at what just happened, it could happen again. And, you know, these contractors are not going to absorb a loss on framing or stucco or concrete or anything like that.
Absolutely. And John had mentioned, you know, John needs to join more often because he's full of info today, but he had said you can go through the county website and look up current mortgages for any property. So
yep,
it's nice. All public info. Eli on here was asking about on YouTube was asking about subject to deals. So briefly, can you explain what
you go ahead? Yeah, because we just went through a thing with Pace Morby. He does a lot of these.
Yeah, you're basically, and it's kind of what we just talked about, but we'll go a little more in depth here. It's basically assuming a seller's mortgage, right? So you're kind of giving them some kind of down payment. Everything works differently, and then you assume their mortgage, which if their mortgage is at 3%, that's amazing for you. Couple things with the seller, you have to educate them because most sellers aren't going to know about this. So as a buyer, it's all about the education. It's all about making them understand that this is a very safe deal for them. The risk as a buyer is if the owner of the property declares bankruptcy, then the property can be taken even if you're making payments on it. So that is something to look into. So you kind of want to make sure the person you're buying from is a pretty stable credit. You know, most people don't, you know, file for bankruptcy, right? So you just have to make sure that they're not underwater on a bunch of things, that it's just this one thing that they need to get rid of that they can't get rid of. And then for the seller, the risk to you is that if the buyer stops making payments, because now, you know, you can't make payments for them the way it's set up. So those are the risks. It can be very rewarding, you know, pays more being certain people, you know, basically built their whole career on it. We definitely see more of these coming now that people are sitting in 3% interest rates. I'm personally looking for some good subject to deals. So, you know, I think that it's a good thing to do. Just make sure you do your homework. You know, we just knew someone that just got a subject to deal on a condo. They didn't look into the HOA, and the HOA just did a $20,000 assessment, right? So these are the things you really have to do your full scope of homework if you're going to do a subject to deal, but it can be really a great deal, especially if you can get a low interest rate.
Yep. Good. And you know, we should have Pace on.
Yeah, we should have Pace
on. Yeah, and do a subject to podcast, because that's actually a great idea. I actually, we should start looking at things that you can do with the seller.
Yeah.
To buy deals. Actually, that should be our focus for 2023, because that's how deals are going to get done.
Exactly. Yep. Chris from YouTube, he said, hello from Mesa. I'm looking to buy an $800,000 new home in Queen Creek. My Mesa home that I own outright is worth $450,000 to $500,000. I won't have a huge down payment for my new home. So should I rent or sell my current home? Thanks. A few things here. If you're buying a new home in Queen Creek, are you getting a good deal on it? Because new homes are, you know, you can get a, if you wait a little bit, it might be discounted.
It's possible. Yeah. We're, I got my eye on anything that's under construction because of the, you know, we talked a minute about this earlier. You know, if somebody's building something, they're in a variable rate loan, a construction loan that's actually a liability. Mm-hmm. So, I think that you might see some discounts on some of these new homes. Congrats, by the way, on that. Queen Creek is beautiful. You know, I've been out there many times. It's a kind of a new up and coming community. I don't know. You know, it's hard to know whether or not that, you know, you need to know more about the rate and all that. But to answer your question, you know, I would, if I were you, I would rent that place as
yes.
opposed to sell that place.
1,000%.
So that, you know, I think that, you know, if your home is worth $450,000 to $500,000, you know, you're probably going to, it means it's a very nice home and you're probably going to get a pretty good mortgage, and you can find a family for that. And it could be a nice little cash flow in many, many, many cases.
I think, you know, you really, it might even pay your full.
It's possible.
You know, on your, because you own it outright. And so you know, you might pay your full mortgage or a big portion of your mortgage on your new place.
Possible, yeah.
Yep.
Depending on what your rate is, it sounds like you're a VA, which is awesome. You know, you qualify for VA. So I'm sure that that's a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
So
just rent it. You know, that's kind of what I always did with mine, right? Like the first two I had, I lived in them, bought a new one, rented out the old one.
Well, this is right when we met.
Yeah, I didn't know. You know, I wasn't going to do that.
She was going to sell the home she was in and buy another one. And we were dating at the time, and I said, I don't think that's a good idea. And, you know, it took, 11 dinners and 16 coffees to convince her.
I just didn't want to be a landlord, but I'm telling you, and I was saying this on Jeremy's podcast yesterday, it's the best thing I did. So I would just hold on to that. You're going to regret it, right? You're going to regret selling it because, you know, we're going to go through this down cycle, and then we're going to go through an up cycle. And then in, you know, 10 or 15 years, you're like, why did I sell that thing for $500? You know, now it's worth whatever, $800, or, you know what I mean? And all this time you could have just been collecting rent on it. And so if I were you, I just hold on to that thing, rent it, make sure you do homework and watch our videos on how to select the right tenants so that you have a good experience. But I think that you could really do well with that. All right. Will wants to know, they want to hire a creative property manager to help navigate the current market, because the market's definitely getting trickier. They're currently in Airbnbs, but willing to try another way. What are keys to look for in a good property manager? They're looking for someone that knows how to keep the property on the top of the algorithms, which I thought was interesting, and also do a great job managing.
So there are two different things, by the way. So I know great property managers that are not good at social and not good on the internet. But what I would do is I would start there. Go look for a property manager that's already doing that. So that means they already have a business. In other words, you know, you don't want to find somebody and then, you know, try to talk them into that. So start there. Go look for that person. You know, the thing about property management, it's an extremely local business. So, you know, if you have something like in downtown, wherever, you know, and your property manager is in the suburbs, they're probably not going to be as knowledgeable about a lot of things that are happening in, even though they might be fairly close in proximity. So, so you got to find the property manager that is proficient in that area that you're interested in. And then I would go on the internet and I would take a look at and work backwards. And the thing is, it's not necessarily a company thing too. And some people fall into this. So in other words, you can have a really good property manager that is actually a realtor and, you know, they have experience in that and they're good at it. You can have one that works for a property management company that's new and doesn't have a lot of experience. So, so it's an individual thing versus a company thing. So, but that's what I would do. I would re-engineer and start with what your needs are and then work backwards.
Absolutely. And, you know, we are getting a lot of comments here on the property managers, you know, people that have had bad experiences with property managers. The thing is, if you hire a property manager because you don't have time to do it yourself, that's fine. But you have to manage them correctly.
Yeah.
So I was talking to our friend Michelle yesterday, and they have a property manager. And she said they basically send her, because they send her things that the tenant wants fixed, right? Like the cabinet squeaky, right? Well, the property management company has no problem sending somebody out because it's their handyman and they upcharge it and they bill her. So her system with them is they let her know what's wrong and then she sends her guy out if she feels like it's something that needs fixed. And then also, you know, with the rents, like, you know, working with them on deciding what the rent should be. So if you are going to just sit there and leave it and let them manage it, you're probably not going to be super happy with how it's run. You have to be involved.
So Daniil runs four,
yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. This weekend, by the way, guys, I drove to Home Depot Sunday morning, picked up two toilets,
yep,
bunch of paint stuff, you know, because the boss here said, you know, go do that. And, you know, so there is some work is the point. And, you know, she's in there and we're looking at the tile and the grout and the paint and the lighting.
And dog hair on the baseboard.
And stuff.
All this stuff.
You know, so that's the other side of it. But, you know, in our case, she does them herself. At some point, you have to decide whether or not it's worth your time. And then finding that person, I think Kelly said it perfectly. You know, you're going to find people that are not good, and you know, and you're going to get into a negligence or gross negligence situation, you know. But there are very good ones out there. There are, but they're really hard to find.
Yep, and they're probably not going to be your cheapest.
Right.
And something else that's been really helpful to me, that's an idea for you smaller landlords, is having, you know, I have a girl that helps me in the office with my rentals, right? And, you know, I just pay her like an hourly rate as needed kind of thing.
Oh, tell her your trick. I love this trick. Oh, by the way, cat's out of the bag. So when she first started managing, so she told the tenants that she was the owner.
Oh, yeah. I don't do that anymore.
Yeah. So she switched. She said, now, you know, I work for the management company, right?
Yeah. I work for the management company and I have them have her number. So if they need anything, they call and text her, and then she then relays it to me, and then we make a decision about how we're going to handle it. But for me, she's been helpful because, like, you know, the HOA called me a couple weeks ago and said, hey, you know, your light bulb keeps burning out really quickly when, we put a new one in, so you need to have someone come look at that. I'm like, really? So I send her out. I go, screw a light bulb. If it works, we're taking a picture. We're telling them, you know, go pound sand. It works. You know what I mean? If it doesn't, I'll get a handyman out here to fix the light fixture. So, of course, it worked, right? So she saved me like a $100 handyman appointment by just plugging in a light bulb. And I'm busy, right? So that those kind of things take my time. And so it's just, you don't have to get either self-manager or property manager. If you get someone to help you for an hourly rate, maybe that's all you need.
Yeah. And by the way, we've always had a handyman at our disposal. In fact, we just cut a deal with this guy yesterday. We have them once a week for 8 hours. and we have a fixed number per hour. And then we have a number of projects at our own personal house, at the rentals, here at my office. So I'll just keep them busy. Trust me, if I know I have somebody at $50 an hour at 8 hours, and I'm going to pay them $400 a week, they can cover a number of things. And obviously you'd want to do that if you have a number of projects like we do.
Absolutely.
Of property management, that's a hot topic.
I know. Well, Gallen said when you have enough experience, then you start to know what to expect, and it becomes easily to spot a bad one.
Yeah.
I mean, the one thing you could easily do is just ask them what they would rent your place for, and then you have already done your homework and just see which ones are most accurate.
Yep.
All right. This is from Jay. He said, Happy holidays, Ken. After a lot of thought and watching hours of content of yours and Robert, I've decided to pursue a career in real estate as a real estate agent. Do you have any advice for me?
Do it.
You know, it's a good time to get in.
It is.
It's a good time. My friend Jess is wanting to do real estate right now. And she's like, you know, I don't know. It's so slow. And I'm like, that's the best.
She got laid off, by the way. So,
yeah,
this is a really interesting time for people, you know, to make career changes. By the way, her friend is super smart. You know, they do Airbnbs, and she has all these balls in the air. She's always been juggling. But the company that she worked for is having to slow down. It's a medical company. And so they made some changes, and so she decided that she wants to start this career change. So we highly encourage that.
Good.
Because she's going to be really good at it.
Absolutely. And, you know, I also think it's a good time because it's slow. Like, you don't want to start something new when it's hot and everyone's doing it, because you're going to miss that boat, because you have to learn. You know, it takes time to learn. So when you get in right now when it's, you know, very slow, you know, you can more easily find real estate agents that'll mentor you. They'll have time, you know, to bring you to showings and do all of those things. And of course, you're going to need to work another job if you need to make income in the meantime. But this is the time for you to learn. And then just don't expect to really be successful at it for a few years. Because any business you start, it takes time.
But by the way, we know plenty of people that are in this business that have only done a few transactions all year. Right.
Yep.
So you got to understand that, you know, the timing of when you come into something, whatever it is very, very, very important. You have rising home prices. Well, right now they're coming down, but rising interest rates, high inflation, and the people that were once doing a lot of volume, mortgage companies, title companies, real estate agents, home builders, you know, that's in the rearview mirror now.
But I would say if you're going to be a real estate agent, make sure that you know, if you're an investor, that's awesome, right? Because we love working with real estate agents that are investors, because they understand it from an investor point of view. So whatever your niche is, just make sure you really understand that niche and you really are honest with your clients. Because as we were talking to Jeremy yesterday, you know, it's a long-term relationship, right? If you found out your real estate agent kind of BS'd you and, you know, you shouldn't have bought right now and you did, or you bought a house that wasn't worth what it was, then, you know, you're less likely to use them in the future. So it's all about relationship building.
The other thing that I would suggest is that you pair up with somebody who's like a mentor or coach in that. So like Alisa, the girl that we use, she has a couple people working under her in her team, I guess. And they're learning, they're younger than her, and they're learning a lot from her. You know, in fact, my son bought a home through one of her, you know, mentees, I guess, or associates. So that's a great way to, you know, anytime you can get any kind of experience or wisdom from somebody who's got 20, 30 years under their belt, you're going to develop better habits and systems.
Absolutely. And I wanted to touch on real quick, you know, what we were talking about yesterday, which is, just be patient in this cycle. Don't be in a big hurry to buy right now. If you find a cash flowing deal, buy it. But if you're a first-time home buyer or something, you know, we're gonna see some price drops here in the next few months. So just be patient.
Yep. Yep. Be careful, guys. It's a time to be cautious, for real.
Absolutely. So, all right. Well, we'll see you guys next week. And
pencils down, bro.
Have a good Christmas or happy holidays.
We'll see you guys.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Real Estate Strategies Podcast. If you liked what you heard, please give us a 5-star review on iTunes and let us know what you thought of today's episode. Thank you, and we'll see you next week.